Our next expert, who came to us from Long Island, and his condition before coming here was that first he has to learn with his son, Avos Ubanim. So that certainly is putting things in the right perspective. And but yet he did that, and he zoomed over here. And he, Rabbi Dov Schreier, is going to discuss eating out what could be the problem. There is not necessarily a problem, but there could be a problem, and that's why when a person eats out, they have to make sure that they're eating out under a proper hashgacha. He's going to be discussing restaurants, caterers, and the Shabbos Kiddush. Rabbi Dov Schreier Schlita.
Problem with speaking after Rabbi Perlmutter is most of my good stories come from Rabbi Perlmutter. We knew that before, so in this morning's parsha, talks about Avram feeding the malachim. What amounts to seeming to be feeding the basar b'chalav. But this gives us the opening to talk about two topics. One, just as an opening, about achnasas orchim, of thanking the shul and the rav. We understand that another simcha to go to for opening the shul and inviting us in this evening. And the second is to talk about kashrus, which is what I'm going to talk about. And hope to talk about dealing with the kashrus aspect of eating out, and hope to hit the ground running. The OU in food service, which refers to caterers, restaurants, hotels, requires a mashgiach tamidi from opening to closing. Other local vadim have their own policies and what they do, but the OU as a policy requires a mashgiach tamidi from opening to closing. And the only halachic discussion that I'll have tonight is I always begin the discussion saying we distinguish ourselves from other hashgachos with a brisker hakira. The difference between a chefta and a gavra. The OU is making a major attempt to verify that which is going on in the place is kosher. The object, the chefetz that we're certifying is kosher. Whereas many people are relying on the balabas being the person who's in charge of hashgacha and having people coming in, checking on them, yotzi v'nichnas, maybe even stronger than having a mashgiach there, are relying on the gavra. If you ever read a haskama to a sefer, very rarely does a haskama say that I actually read the sefer and know that know what's written in the sefer is very good, but rather, hi gavra rabba, this great person is very good, and is chazaka in a motzi davar mitachas yado, he won't take anything from under his hand that's not kosher. The people are giving hashgacha or might be giving hashgacha on the gavra, on the person who they're trusting, whereas we have to have a certain level of trust, but we generally try to verify and be sure there's a mashgiach tamidi. Five issues which are on the first page of the handout that you have, eating out, which we're going to address in different ways. The first one is Bishul Akum. Chazal declared a number of decrees in the interest of preventing the Jews and non-Jews from mixing and preventing intermarriage. The one that everyone's familiar with is the concept of Bishul Akum. This doesn't only apply to restaurants and caterers. Anyone who has domestic help in their home hopefully has told their domestic help the first rule is you don't cook in my house. Right, that the first time they go and cook and make food in your house, right? Reheating, we'll discuss it. You can discuss more, but if they're cooking in your house, there's a major problem with your ovens. Food that is not edible raw and is served at a king's table, there's a certain level of discussion of what a king's table is, needs to have a Jew have a hand in the process. The Maror Makomos talk about the various different opinions. The Svardim are much more stringent in this area than the Ashkenazim. The Svardim, the Jew not only needs to turn on the fire, but the Jew needs to have a hand in the cooking process. The Svardim, Bnei Yisrael Yotzim Biyad Ramah, the Ashkenazim rely on the Ramah, say as long as the Jew turns on the fire. So therefore, it's very important when you're setting up, whether it be a restaurant, you have to know how all the fires operate. Some of the areas where this becomes relevant is the regular oven, or Perlmutter spoke about a gas top oven, which has a pilot light. Are you relying on the fact that the pilot light was lit by a Jew, or does the Jew have to turn on the fire as well? Some of the newer pilots that are made in the newer ovens, the pilot's actually individual for each fire, and the pilot's in the middle. I actually have on my phone a picture. We went to ask Rabelsky, one of the poskim in the OU, about if the pilot's mamish in the middle of the fire, not on the side of the fire like it used to be, whether if the mashgiach turns on that pilot, whether the non-Jew would be allowed to turn on the fire. Our policy, the OU policy, is we do not rely on the pilot lights as a lechatchila system, but only as a backup system, that b'dieved we certainly rely on if the pilot was turned on by a Jew. Then if the guy turned it on, while we don't encourage it, we won't be running to throw out food. But a couple other pieces of equipment. One, Rabbi Perlmutter spoke about a convection oven. Convection oven is much more effective than a regular stovetop or an oven because the fan blows the heat and allows it to cook in a more even-handed way. The newer models of convection ovens were made in such a way that when you open the door, not only does the fan go off, but the fire goes off as well. It's been tested that within about 3 to 4 minutes after you open the convection oven, the fire goes below what's called the shear bishul, the temperature by which cooking can be done. I think on the list, it might list 176 degrees, which is, I think, the number of Belsky used, but we generally try and use 200 because we don't want to come close to that when in dealing with the restaurants. So when they have this convection oven, if every time the guy opens the convection oven and leaves it open for a few minutes, if he's going to close it, you're going to have a problem. So what we've done, this is somewhat of a problem, but this is the only way to deal with it. We've told the establishments that you're going to have to bring in an electrician who can override, who can bypass this or override this mechanism, that even when the fan goes off, it will not go below 200 degrees. We tell them this at the same time. Please understand that whatever warranty you have on this piece of equipment is no longer going to be relevant. By pulling up and opening this, when you open the oven, it will never go under 200 degrees. And that's how those companies with the newer convection ovens, before they can operate, are able to use. Another area that became relevant recently, and that's why I included in the packet an extra two sides of a page about the pre-opening checklist, was one of the places was opened recently, and they're making eggs for breakfast. Eggs are one food that do fall into the category that they need to be turned on, need to be cooked by a Jew. So in many places they have a grill or a griddle, once you turn it on, it stays on, and it'll stay on to a high enough temperature, and it's not a problem. But this place does not have any gas heat. Everything they have is electronic ignition or electric ovens and steam kettles. What they're using to make the eggs, which they're using during lunchtime for their pasta bar, is an induction heater. An induction heater, unless you put the pot on the heater, it will not go on. If that's not turned, every time you take the pot off, when you made the eggs for one person, you're going to give it to the next person, every time it's going to be used, it has to be turned on by a Jew. So in that situation, in that specific place, we have a Jew is the one who's serving the eggs in the morning, to be sure that that's taken care of. The next issue on the list is separating fish and meat. The Shulchan Aruch has one line. We try and keep fish and meat separated. We want to turn ahead a couple of page, turn to the other side of the page, and show you a couple of different areas where it becomes relevant. To ask about a restaurant is how they segregate, but at a wedding, at a hotel, and even at a restaurant, what is the process of keeping meat and fish separate? So it's not only that the meat and fish don't go into the oven at the same time. It also is relevant to the side dishes. If one wants to have French fries, fish and chips, in a Fleishika restaurant, the Ashgacha has to know that the French fries are not fried in the same oil that the chicken cutlets and the meat and whatever else you're frying are going in. In fact, at one time, about 2 years ago, the OU conducted a full review of all of our establishments. And that was one area which we were mechazik very strongly at the time. One of the restaurants we noticed was making a side dish that they were serving with the fish, that they were frying in the same oil that meat was being fried in. And the mashgiach didn't pick up on it. Sometimes, you know, you think the fact that there's a Shomer Shabbos Yid owning the establishment is the be-all end-all of things going right. This happened to be a restaurant that's owned by a non-Jew. We pointed it out to him at about 12:30 in the afternoon. Before lunch was over that day, it was already off the menu and they had changed the way they were making the side dish. They were making it in a pot so it wouldn't go in the fryer later. It doesn't only extend, you know, the actual fish and meat, but it's the side dishes that go with it. At a smorgasbord, right, Rabbi Perlmutter spends a lot of time, whether it's on Shabbos or whether it's at a catering event, when they're setting up the buffet tables to make sure that the fish is the fish, the meat is the meat, and even more, it's even more difficult because how do you tell the difference between breaded fish sticks and breaded chicken cutlets? The things that we see, you see gefilte fish, you know it's gefilte fish. You see a piece of white fish, you see a piece of salmon, you know what it is. But the caterer is already dressing it up in so many different things, by the time you see what's coming before you, you don't know what it is. So it's very important that it's clearly marked and clearly segregated, the fish and the meat. What happens at a restaurant, someone wants to order a pastrami sandwich with tuna. Right? You know, may sound quite, you know, reprehensible to any of us who are makbid, but, you know, not everyone going to the restaurants are frum Jews or even Jewish. I would say in some of the restaurants in Manhattan, good 40 to 50% of their clientele are not Jewish. So, you make a good product and you have a quality product and you have good service, doesn't matter, they enjoy the food anyway. But at a catering event, the way dinner is served at a catering event, if you've been at a chasana, bar mitzvah, so they what's called French service, they go ahead and they'll serve on the fancy plates. The waiters will come out and give you your chicken and your meat, and they're going to use the same tongs to dispense your chicken and dispense your potatoes and your carrots. But if you'll notice, the fish is always brought to you on a plate. The mashgiach is very careful to set up a separate table, a separate area, where they're dishing out the fish and the side dishes of the fish separately to be sure that meat and fish are kept separately. And of course on Shabbos, right, being sure that you don't have your gefilte fish and chopped liver on the same bed of lettuce when it's being served for lunch on Shabbos. They come in all different ways, shapes, and sizes. If we turn back, the next topic goes to sending deliveries by non-Jews and basash and more colloquially referred to as basash and salam and ayin. Many people, especially if you work in Manhattan, work late hours. I guess the only benefit maybe you have from it is that you're allowed to order out from a restaurant. I'm sure Shalom Bayis is not great when that happens, but you're able to order out from the restaurant. And you imagine you got to work at 6 o'clock at 7 o'clock in the morning, and you went ahead and you have been in meetings all day. It's 8 o'clock at night, and if you had 3 cups of coffee that day during the day, you were lucky. And now you go ahead and you order from a restaurant, and what happens? Food comes unsealed. What are you supposed to do? So the Shulchan Aruch talks about this and says that meat, wine, fish that doesn't have any sign that was sent by a non-Jew needs two chosamos, needs two different signs. The poskim of the OU felt that if the tape, if the kosher tape is on and it's in on in a way that's tamper-proof, that's considered a tuchel samos, so you don't need something else. But in general, most places will have the bill, the receipt stapled to the bag. Most of the modern establishments won't just send you the old receipt book with your receipt, but we'll have a printout with the name of the restaurant on the receipt. We'll tell you exactly what you ordered. In addition, right, you see what you ordered. You ordered it a half an hour ago. Right, b'di'evad yesh lismach, even on one simon or some type of sign. What's the reason for shiluach al yidei akum? What are we afraid of? We're afraid of chiluf. We're afraid that they're going to switch the kosher for the non-kosher. But in order for that to be the case, there has to be some type of benefit to the person who's going to switch. If the delivery guy in a number of establishments, the person who's making the deliveries has to pay the restaurant in order for him not to be an official employee of the restaurant, but that's not my ASIC now, right? He has to pay the restaurant before he walks out of the restaurant for the food that he's taking to this place. So now, what benefit is he going to have by taking the food and going to somewhere else? Right, that doesn't mean that a system doesn't have to be in place. What I'm trying to do is, yes, it can be a problem, but no, you don't necessarily have to throw out the food. A bigger problem comes up in a situation where you have seven or eight people in an office who are ordering lunch, and they order it, and it comes to the secretary by the front who's an Eino Yehudi, and the secretary is checking the order, and what happened? The restaurant only went ahead and sealed the outside box, the outside bag for the food that's coming. They didn't seal every individual sandwich. And now, what happens? You come out, you know, the secretary buzzes you, your lunch is here. You come and you get a corned beef sandwich. No tape, no nothing. No, what happened? Now, maybe you could see the bag and you could see that the bag was taped. Right, so you have to be an active consumer. If you're ordering from an office and you know that seven or eight people are ordering, as the consumer and as the customer, you have every right to ask the establishment to tell them, please seal everything individually. I get many indignant calls from customers, Hayitachen, Hayishama, that they didn't go ahead and seal. Their job is to seal the delivery. They got an order from X and X office. They said the delivery was sealed. They have to seal every individual item. Yes, if they're sending to a cafeteria in your office where they're going to put out 10 sandwiches and the cafeteria is going to sell the sandwiches, yes, every individual sandwich has to be sealed. But if the delivery was sealed, how much more do you want from them? One message I want to get across tonight is that every person in the crowd here has a right to ask, maybe has an obligation to ask, but you have to know what to ask. Right? You're allowed to ask, and don't be apologetic when you're asking the question. Or if you had a problem, and you have to call the hashgacha, whether it's the OU or any other hashgacha, your delivery didn't come sealed. You need to call the hashgacha. Besides the restaurant, call the hashgacha because you're an extra set of eyes for us. You're the ones who are going to help us along to make sure that the next time it doesn't happen to whether it's you or your colleague next door or anyone who's the Acheinu Bnei Yisrael. That you're the consumer, right? You know, the most frustrating thing, and I'm sure a promoter can corroborate this. You come to a chasana, 1,000 people. They spared no expense. Every station from every ethnic group is on the smorgasbord. They have the Vietnamese table to kill. And everything going on. So comes the dessert. You know, a very frum-looking person comes over to Rabbi Perlmutter or the Mashgiach on the job and says, oh, who's the Mashgiach here tonight? The person's coming with, he didn't look in the mirror before he came over, and he still has the, you know, ice cream seeping down his beard. I said, ask before you go. I mean, I have a very close chaver who, you know, I marvel at his Yira Shamayim, because I speak to him 3 to 4 times a week. Whatever he's going through, a simcha, is this place okay? That's what you need to do. You don't just need to rely. You hear it's going somewhere. 9 out of 10 catering halls, unless they're exclusive, could have a different caterer every night of the week. And many of the caterers, you wouldn't necessarily consider bringing into your home. So we can rely on the haskama that we started off at the beginning and say, this person would never go after a caterer that's no good. But you know what? I want to share a maisa that happened a couple of weeks ago. And this seems to echo a lot of the maisim that have happened over the last few months. I say Baruch Hashem, I heard about it, and Baruch Hashem, it didn't happen to one of my places, but it can happen even with a mashgiach tamidi. So I'm not going to fool myself in that way. There was a few people were at a Sheva Brachos on a weeknight, and they were about to eat the dessert. They were in the middle of eating dessert when someone gets up on the table and claps and says, anyone who's eating the ice cream, stop eating the ice cream. The ice cream is milchit. Right, now, generally, a Sheva Brachos is not going to be a parv or a milchit a Sheva Brachos, unless you're going to a milchit restaurant. But at a Fleishika Simcha, the ice cream was milchit. What happened? So first of all, when does a mashgiach leave? Assuming it was a mashgiach, when does a mashgiach leave? Right? What could be bad? The dessert, leave after, you know, the main course is all the food is sealed. What, the dessert, coffee, the tea, what's the big deal? Mashgiach can leave. So what happened? As they're preparing the dessert, they realized that they forgot to get the ice cream. So they sent a guy. Baruch Hashem, this time he even went to the kosher supermarket. He went to the kosher supermarket to get what he told them, the fake ice cream. Right? So the guy didn't understand the word fake. And he went ahead and bought the ice cream. The owner, or the manager on the job, had left already. And no one saw it. How did someone find it? How did the siyata d'shmaya happen that someone saw it? This hall is in a yeshiva. And the one benefit the yeshiva boys have is when the leftovers from a simcha, they can come, you know, they know the simcha is from 7:30 to 10. At 9:30, they can come down and have some of the leftovers from the simcha. One of the boys walked into the dining room, walked into the kitchen, and saw the milchik ice cream, and pointed it out to someone, and saw it. Now, generally, one of the things we tell our caterers, and it's for this exact reason, our caterers, restaurants, if you run out of something, even if you're not going to send the mashgiach to go and get the product, what you need, whether it's going to be non-dairy creamer, right? In case you haven't noticed, there are many non-dairy creamers out there that are OUD. They're not just OUD equipment, but the sodium caseinate in there, the dairy farmers have convinced the USDA to call that non-dairy, even though halachically it's 100% dairy. So you can have a non-dairy creamer which is going to be 100% dairy. It's OUD. So you're going ahead and you're sending the guy to go get non-dairy creamer, right? Even if someone's got to check it. That's why we tell the caterers and the restaurants, you're going to send someone out, tell the mashgiach you're going, and certainly, you know, all deliveries, incoming deliveries must be checked by the mashgiach. This is the reason. You have in other lectures that I give in yeshivas and day schools, I do a show and tell talking about different products. So I bring rice pilaf, right? The Near East rice pilaf has an OU parv, OU dairy, and OU fleishik. Right? You have to be careful. They're all 100% fine, separate kelim, but you have to know. And in fact, in one supermarket I went into, they have a big sign in yellow and red point with an OU meat pointing to the ones that are meat. So you have to be careful. But mashed potato mix, for example. Mashed potato mix, right, can come parv and can come dairy. The funny one is the one that I have that's parv says right next to the OU, add milk and margarine. right, just in case, I guess the one that's OUD already did that for me. But you have to be careful, and that's why someone has to check every product. And in fact, every time it comes, because chocolate pudding, right, in a 10 can, right, in a big industrial sized can be parv, and in a carrying container like the oil comes in, can be D. Same company, same everything, different process, probably made in a different factory. So, sending deliveries, and also, we come back to the sending of deliveries, it also reflects on how you're protecting the integrity of the product in your restaurant, which will lead to the closing procedure, how you open, who has keys to the place, who has keys to the refrigerators, all of these, and even the best intention situation, very often, you know, when you have to be there 5 in the morning, and you come every day, and right, there's a tendency to give the guy a key because, you know, the manager has been late too many times. That's something you have to be very careful with in that area. Almond milk, right, we talk about at a simcha, so certainly in a treifa place, but we try to do this always in catering, when they're serving coffee rich, we try and make sure that they use the portion-controlled coffee rich. The reason for that is the Shulchan Aruch writes you should have something on the almond milk or some almonds next to the milk because of Maariv Zayin. This way, especially in a hotel, when milk is readily available to the waiters, and I don't know how much, I didn't hear the beginning of Rabbi Perlmutter, but I'm sure he elaborated on the difficulty of dealing with waiters in hotels who 4 hours before the simcha and 4 hours after the simcha are going to know exactly where everything is, and the hashgacha, and this is something that I don't think people realize, the hashgacha has nothing to do with the waiters in a hotel. Nothing. Literally, the waiter can go ahead and take 100 treifa spoons, you can catch him red-handed, and there's very little you can do. They're union, they're the hotel, you have nothing to do with us. It's something that that people should consider before going into these hotels to know what's going on. It's somewhat the failing of the tri-state area that we don't have two or three hotel kitchens that are exclusively kosher. If anyone goes out of town to many, many other communities, I don't know how great the hotel kitchens are, but they have kitchens that are locked up under hashgacha, under the lock and seal of the hashgacha, the local hashgacha. Here, you can go into the Hilton, Marriott, Waldorf. On Monday is okay. Tuesday is OU. Wednesday is less than that. Thursday is less than that. Sunday comes back, right? There's no rhyme or reason. And one of the biggest problems that our mashgichim have in these hotels is when the chefs and the waiters are working in a hotel, and on Tuesday they worked with that lesser hashgacha, right? They don't want to hear from you on Wednesday. Right? You're just a pain in their neck. They don't want to hear from you. They don't want to know from you. They won't give you the ovens and the things until the last minute, right? And if the caterer on Monday schmeared the chef in a proper way, and your caterer on Tuesday refuses to, you'll understand when they need the ovens at 2 o'clock and at 1:30, you were just giving them to clean. If that, so these issues in a hotel are, but having the almond milk is keeping with the hecker. And the last thing is what's called dairy and meat equipment. So the halacha is that, if you made fish in a clean meat pot, so it's not fleishig. But, what's called clean in your home kitchen and what's called clean in a hotel kitchen or in a restaurant kitchen are far from it. And therefore it's important when if you talk about separating meat and fish or separating dairy and meat, knowing what's made in milcha kekelim or fleishig kekelim is very important. The next few minutes, I just want to talk about a couple of things that are very important in dealing with mashgichim. In a manual that we give to all of our mashgichim, one of the things that we say over there is that it's urgent an imperative for a mashgiach to be on time. 1 minute late is 10 minutes too late. That everyone is relying on you to operate and relying on you to be there. If you're not there, you're setting everyone behind. And one of the problems we always had through the years was whenever we had an issue, so the first line that they would say to us, so the rabbi came a half an hour late. And in searching for a way to verify this without creating an uncomfortable situation for the mashgiach, I was in California a few years ago. I met one of the rabbanim from Avad there, and he showed me a Vonage phone system, right? That $14.99 a month, right? That you have a phone number, you call in from the establishment phone, you can log it all online. It'll get the phone number they called from, the date, the time they called from. And we now have all of our mashgichim, at least in the restaurants and caterers. Many people who, Rabbi Perlman, I'm sure, is the first among them, would love that when he sends mashgichim to factories, to have them doing it also, because then he can know which ones are actually really coming on time and not faking it. But we have all the mashgichim calling in this number when they come and before they leave. And I think in the last 2 years since we have this system in place, I haven't gotten too many comments about the mashgichim coming late. You do get it, but this is, you know, I explained to the mashgichim, the purpose of this system is intended to protect you. Right? This is to protect the mashgiach when they claim that he came late. But it also is, you know, a number of mashgichim told me they feel a much greater achrayus to come on time. I don't know why that I needed to be the policeman to do that, but we actually have a secretary who listens to all the messages every morning and logs it. And in fact, in the state of New York, the state kashrus division was always looking for a way to quantify or qualify the standards of different hashgachos. Right? They wanted to, you know, force the ones who were coming once a month and once in 6 months and once in a year to get their check to become, you know, on some website to know how often they come. They weren't coming after the OU. We have a mashgiach to meet and people visiting. They've actually accepted this log as our sign-in sheet for all these. So, you know, I told the mashgichim, you know, we're going to get a fine from the state if you don't call in, and we're not paying the fine. So now that we have, you know, it's coming from both ends, they're required to call in. If you turn to the extra page that there was given with it, the food service establishment pre-opening checklist, I want to show how these some of the areas we've spoken about. It's not in. It's a separate paper. A two-sided page. Food service establishment pre-opening checklist.
Anybody doesn't have it?
So you see, the first section talks about kitchen security. Right? Only the mashgiach has keys to the facility, yes or no. Please explain why someone is allowed to have access. Why would someone be allowed to have access? Because we have a gas cutoff. The gas is completely cut off and all the refrigerators are locked. So he can get into the restaurant, but he can't do anything because he's there. How is the kitchen secured? Either equipment's locked, doors to the kitchen are locked, restaurant is locked and sealed. It could be any of those. A lock box has been installed. One of the concerns that I have and protections for the establishment. What happens when at Friday morning at 6:45 when I'm finishing davening, my cell phone rings from a mashgiach who's supposed to be in a restaurant in about 15 minutes that, you know, he supposedly left me a message the night before, which I didn't hear, that he had an infection and he wasn't going to work. So what am I supposed to do now when I'm in Long Island and I got to get someone there? So one of the things we've done, many people have in their homes, I even think I saw in the shul, you have a push-button lock to get into the shul, that we put in the establishments, instead of those type of keys to get in, but a box that you can open with that type of combination where the keys go there. What is that? In the past, we always had an envelope which was sealed with kosher tape and signed by the mashgiach. What always ended up happening was if the mashgiach called us, so we knew that he wasn't there. But the mashgiach, for whatever reason, didn't call, the establishment would break the emergency key, and say, the rabbi's not here, I gotta go. Alright, and then, you know, hopefully at some point they get around to telling us, oh, by the way, the rabbi didn't come. And then you're behind the eight ball trying to get someone there. Now, when we have this lockbox, they don't have a choice. They have to call you. They don't have a key to the refrigerators. They don't have a way to get in. They have to call you. My fortune, for the most part, is in Manhattan. I have a number of restaurants which are in close proximity to one another. So what I can do in such an emergency is you know, that on a Friday at 7 in the morning, I wasn't as concerned as I would be on a regular day, but I can call a mashgiach from a few blocks down, go to the place, open it up, get it started, and by that time I've already, once I find the mashgiach and know he's coming, I know the other guy's going to be there within 20 minutes, he'll get there. But that prevents them from going in without, so that's what the lockbox is. Right, equipment security, I talked about a gas cutoff, electric equipment, you know, your microwave. Right, one of the concerns that we have when they have a cleaning crew coming into the establishment and no Shomer Shabbos, no Mashgiach, no person there, is that the cleaning crew is going to go to McDonald's and, you know, put food on the gas, put food in the microwave to reheat it, because by the time they came back, you know, it's no longer hot like they wanted it. So we want to try and have, Home Depot sells a plug lock, right, a lock on the plug that they can't plug in the microwave and turn it on, or some form of protecting the ovens from being used. In a pizza shop, right, Perlmutter spoke about this pizza shop in the Empire State Building. One of the things that they do in most pizza shops, right, they have a problem with it for Pesach, but they like to keep their ovens on at least 250 degrees 24/7. So the problem is, it's very nice if I protect the cooking equipment, but what does that do for me? They can just open the oven and put it in at 250 degrees. So it'll take them a few minutes longer to heat up the food. So what we've done in a number of places is we've put a bar over the pizza, through the doors of the pizza oven, with a lock on the bottom to prevent the people from being able to open the oven when the restaurant is closed, even though the pizza oven will remain on. If you turn to the second side for a moment, right, separate utensils for meat and fish. If no, how will meat and fish be segregated? Side dishes, right, these are all issues. Water filtration, I see outside they have something about filtered water outside. I'm not sure if that's halachic or practical, hygienic. Bedikas Tolaim, I think Rabbi Eisen is going to speak in a couple weeks about that, but the system has to be in place for that. Tvilas Kalim, right? We're not relying on that it's Klei Mischar, where we have, Mashgiach is going to oversee the process of taking care of the... how much time do we have left?
You're almost up.
I'm almost up. So in the last few minutes before we have questions, I just want to turn ahead to our... to our Shabbos menu, and just discuss a couple of things. Jews love to eat. One of the areas, we have a kiddush in many places. Baruch Hashem for simchas, we have a kiddush. A number of years ago, we put together a whole menu for Shabbos. I wanted to just touch on a couple of the points that need attention. At any simcha, the person coming to the simcha has to be aware, is under the impression that everything that's being served at that simcha is under the hashgacha of the caterer. What do I mean by that? This means that if you're at a bar mitzvah in shul, the candy bags. If they're throwing candy bags at the chassan or at the bar mitzvah boy, if that hasn't been outlawed, which I think some shuls have done that already. But you have to make sure the person who's coming is thinking the caterer is taking care of that. Especially in a hotel. Wine and liquor. Right, the wine, right, you have to make sure the wine is mevushal. You're always going to have an issue with whether it's the non-Jewish relative who's there for Shabbos or... Now, we insist in all of our establishments that they're not allowed to serve non-mevushal wine. Right, you can imagine if a person's coming to a business meeting at a fancy... There's one yid and three goyim, and they're ready to sit down. And, one of the goyim is the one who's paying for this meal. And they want a $400 bottle of wine. Non-mavushal wine is highly more expensive than even this, notwithstanding the markups of the restaurants. And they open the bottle and the yid pours the first cup, and now the non-Jew wants to see the bottle. I'm sorry, you can't see the bottle. Once he touches the bottle, you're finished. All right, so non-mavushal wine you have to be careful with. Liquor, I'm not going to touch that. It's something you have to be careful with. But on Shabbos, Mazel Tov Cake, Rav Perlmutter, I remember we got Rav Shechter to write a beautiful tshuva. On one Friday, Rav Perlmutter is at a hotel for a weekend, and the bakery brings the cake, and he sees one of the cakes has Mazel Tov, or Happy Birthday, someone written on the cake. So at the time, Rav Shechter wrote a beautiful tshuva, saying how, you know, it's a chumra of the Ramah, we don't do it, you should put the cake out in front of everyone with Persume Nisa, that it should be put out in front of everyone, that they should see the cake, then take it into the kitchen, have the guy cut it, because it's only a chumra of the Ramah. But, you know, in the normal circumstances, we don't, right, this was on Friday with the question, what should we do? The cake was already there. Most kosher bakeries today know to put it on a cookie or a chocolate. This was when it came on Friday already. Gravy. One has to be careful with how you're heating up the food for Shabbos. Centerpieces with candles. If I didn't see it with my own eyes, I couldn't say it. I was once in a hotel for Shabbos with a mashgiach, and the bane of the existence of the hashgachos, if there's anyone here who does this for a living, I apologize, but I have to say it. Party planner. Right? The party planner has all these great ideas that they put in the head of the balabas, and so the party planner came Friday afternoon, and they put centerpieces in the middle of every table, and they put candles, and she lit the candles before Shabbos. Then I happened to be standing there when she went over to the waiter and gave her and slipped in $20 or more, and told him tomorrow morning before lunch, can you put in new candles and light them? Yeah. All right, so you know, I put that there just, you know, every line of this of these menu has a question. Coffee, tea, wedges of lemon, how's the coffee being heated up? Right, and of course, shalushudas, you have to be careful with milchik and 6 hours. And ice cream, parv, remember, we spoke about that already. At the end, you see you have a Shabbos guidelines checklist. One of the things that the OU is a big believer in is, I tell people very often that if you didn't tell it to me in writing, it never happened. I tell people that I'm a tzeduki when it comes to these matters. That I only believe in Torah Shebichtav, not Torah Shebaalpeh. And it's very important because Dvarim Shebichtav, if it's in writing, they can't contradict it. They can't tell you, Rabbi, you never told me, you never. And that's why, you know, whether it's by email, whether it's by fax, whether it's by, you know, in writing, all of these documents are very important to be done in writing. Now, question. In a shul which has a chalon cooking at night, is there a problem with having custodian in the building? Well, if you take the chalon, it's not. If you have some, there should be some form of protection on the chalon, especially if it's a meat chalon. It happens to be that in our offices, there's actually someone who makes chalon every Friday morning for the staff, and for this reason, he doesn't put meat in the chalon. It's a part of a chalon on Fridays because he doesn't want to go through all the whole mahalach of taping up the chalent and figuring out what to do with it overnight. What is the status of secular Jew as far as Bishul Akum is concerned? It's a machlokas. Generally, we're makum. In terms of fixing a convection oven, does the OU bring in its own electrician or will permit the establishment to hire an electrician? One of the things that we try to do is prevent any conflicts of interest. When we were putting in filters and requiring the establishments to put in filters in all the establishments, one of the things we didn't want to do was be the one recommending the plumber, because we didn't want a situation where, you know, aser b'shvil shittis asher, right? We're asering and requiring filters, and now the company is now, you know, the OU is a partner in the company that's putting in all the filters. We want to be careful and to avoid and take the high road in these areas. What we'll do with the establishments, we'll tell them, this is the guy who can do it. You have a couple days to get it, you know, to get it done. If you don't do it, we're gonna have to send them in. All right, but we try not to go in that area. You're going out to eat in an establishment you don't know, call your Rav. Your Rav, generally the OU as a hashgacha can't comment publicly on other hashgachos. We will answer a Rav who's calling to ask the question, but we won't. That's your best approach. Seals on foods that are heated up in non-kosher hotels are always practically burned off and therefore can theoretically be switched. Is that a problem? In what way are they being switched? Right? The fact that they're burnt is an even better sign for you that was the one that they brought. But generally, what they will do is put extra tape on it to make sure that it's taped a little better when it's being heated, or they'll use paper as opposed to aluminum on the top, so it'll be easier to seal. If a non-Shomer Shabbos Jew tells you the pots were kosher or they are kosher, can you believe them? No. If a non-Jew tells you the pots were tayvul or kosher, and can you believe them? No. How many mashgichim are needed for a job? How many people? Where? Is it on four floors? Is it on one floor? There's no answer, but as the numbers increase, the mashgichim increase. Oh, how to deal with problems with liquor in hotels. Major problem. Why? Because the bar has nothing to do with the hotel, and as much as you have to check the bar many, many, many times. Rabbi Perlmutter can share with you horror stories of checking the bar 3 and 4 times at an event. For example, and I'm not commenting on the hashgachos, but the OU as a policy doesn't accept Ocean Spray cranberry juice. And many of the hotels want, that's what they use exclusively. So the caterer is going to have to bring a different cranberry juice to use. But what the hotels want to try to do is pour the cranberry juice into carafes, their own bowls or pitchers or whatever they're going to do. That's why we insist that the bottle has to be there so we know what it is. But what's going to happen when they bring 5 or 6 bottles for 1,000 people, and by the soup they're finished with it? They're going to find a way to quote unquote marry the bottles. They're going to take one of the empty bottles. They're going to go ahead and go to a back room, fill it up with the other cranberry juice, and put it back. Lo and behold, we found another bottle. Right? And one of the other rabbanim who goes to hotels often told me the following story in a different hotel that he went to. They were using one of the lemon mixes or one of the mixes, and he noticed that there were 2 bottles of the same brand. One was lighter than the other. And he chapped what was going on, that they were marrying bottles somewhere else. And he, traced it and caught them and, made a major, made a major to-do with the hotel. But even to make that major to-do becomes a major problem. That's why, who has to turn on a microwave oven? That's a good question. Radio induction of a steel pot. What's it? Who has to turn that on? The mashgiach. The microwave is a machlokas. We try to be machmir, but most of the things going into a microwave in an establishment is already cooked, so it's bishul achar bishul. Can a warmer be used, I assume, on Shabbos if there's no non-Jewish staff to take it out? Does all the food need to be taken out at once? Well, one of the things that we're concerned about opening and closing the hot boxes is that they'll try and find a way to heat up other stuff and put it in. So we don't want them opening and closing, we want them to plan. It becomes an issue when you want to have a Friday night challenge, or you want to have a kid, want to have a Hashkama Minyan type kiddush and other kid, you have to work it out, because these issues can always come up. Okay?
Sure.
I think there's one more.
One more?
Oh. What do you do when you discover a problem with Simcha? Well, it depends what the problem is. Right? You have to remember, in many situations, you're dealing with din and nefashos. Both the nefashos who are making the simcha, the nefashos who are eating, and the future nefashos who hold the caterer hopes to serve. And I want to finish with a story, which is very important. Just there was a photographer who. Someone was calling it to be used for a simcha, and the person who was Reuven wanted to use Levi as a photographer, his name, so we say it. But Reuven called Shimon to see if, you know, if he knew anyone who had experience with Levi. And Shimon said that he heard from Yehuda that that Levi came an hour late to a simcha last week. Right, so Reuven did a little research, and he knew someone who knew the photographer. He called up the photographer to find out what happened. What was the ma'aseh? The ma'aseh was that Yisachar was making a chasana, and the photographer Zvulun didn't show up. Right, Dan or Naftali, whatever you want to keep going down the line, knew Levi, sent him a 911 page, called him on his cell phone, called him to tell him that someone didn't show up, can you get a crew together and go to the simcha? He came, he dropped what he was doing with his crew at this simcha, went to the simcha, took four people out of bed who met him by the simcha, put together recreated the whole chasana, took the pictures. After the first dance, he took all the pictures from before, and was able to recreate everything. And now here he's going ahead, and he's going to be hurt that he came an hour late to the simcha. Right? So you're asking a question, what do you do when you find a problem in the mid-simcha? You better be very sure that the problem that you think you see is really a problem. Right? Milchik ice cream is a real problem. Right? If you have to throw out a food that went into the garbage, that doesn't have to stare the rest of the simcha. Right, if the food is already out there, then you have, you know, you have to use your diplomacy and you have to explain to the caterer, because it's always going to come back to be your fault. Right, that's an important lesson. It's always going to come back. You have to explain to the caterer that we have two choices at this point. You can go out and shut the lights and not allow anyone to see, or create a way to stop everyone from eating, or I'm going to have to go out in front of the table in the middle of the dance floor and clap and say, everyone stop eating. It's your choice. Right? There's one caterer who was catering a simcha on the sands of Atlantic Beach, if it means anything to anyone here. And he realized he was running out of food on the smorgasbord very early on. He, with his connections, was able to raise the flag by the Atlantic Beach Bridge, raise the stop sign, and everyone had to be stopped for a half an hour till the smorgasbord finished, and then everyone came, smorgasbord's done, are you ready for the chuppah? Now I'm just telling you the story because the caterer used chachma, and he did it in his way, and at the end of the day, you're not getting blamed for ruining a simcha. If you would have gotten and said, everyone, food's finished, right? The caterer's finished in business. He ran out of food at the simcha. He came in a creative way of finding a way to getting around the problem.
Good luck. I know who that caterer is.